Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, brought to you by Fearless Sword, the internet's best and biggest Cavaliers blog, and the Locked On Podcast Network, bringing you your team every day. As always, I'm Chris Manning from FearLessSword.com and The Step Back. Today, I'm going to have one of two shows today coming up. First up, Kevin Stankiewicz from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette runs through every Cavs free agency moment so far with me, up until the Dan Gilbert news about Chauncey Billups not coming to Cleveland. And then Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report joins me to talk about Dan Gilbert's time as owner and everything that has come with Gilbert and what we've learned about Gilbert throughout this current situation in a post-David Griffin world. So stay tuned for that episode later today. But first, I want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a longtime, amazing sponsor of the whole Locked On NBA network, and there's no way better for you to go buy and sell tickets right on your smartphone. All it takes is two taps for you to get your phone out and buy tickets. Two taps. Just go in the app, tap twice, boom, you got your tickets to whatever you want to see. They have Indians tickets if you're in Cleveland, concert tickets. If there's a live podcast in town you want to see, you can get it on SeatGeek. And my listeners today can save $20 on their first purchase by using the promo code LOCAVS. That's L-O-C-A-V-S. You're going to save $20 on that first purchase. And again, it's two taps. Open the app. Two taps. You get tickets to whatever you want to see. I use SeatGeek all the time. If I need Indians tickets and it's last minute, I'm going to SeatGeek. I can see the view from my seat, and you can see everything on there. Nothing about SeatGeek will leave you wanting to use another service. And again, save $20, use that promo code LOCAVS. But now here's myself, Kevin Stankiewicz, talking about the Cavs free agent moves. Stay tuned later for an episode with myself and Greg Schwartz covering everything Dan Gilbert from the moment he bought the team until now. Enjoy. Talk to you guys soon. Have a great fourth.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Okay, Kevin, so we're going to run through everything here. Every Cavs bit of news because the pot has been off because of the holiday weekend. We're going to play a little catch-up here and start with stuff that happened on June 30th and get all the way until now. First thing, I'm doing this based on the Fear the Sword rumor tracker. That's what we're using here. You can find that at fearthesword.com. It's pinned on the homepage. You can find catch-up on everything. It's updated almost instantly after we have news up. So, first thing, Chetty Osman appears to be NBA bound. That was the first offseason report we had. What do you just make of Chetty? And what do you make of the idea that he could be on his way?
In the context of everything else, obviously that sounds like good news, right? I mean, the Cavs need players. They need especially guys on the wing. So I like the idea that Osman might be joining the team. The question, of course, is just how, from a financial standpoint, that happens. But the idea of him coming over is exciting. And as with any guy that spends a couple years overseas, there's a certain level of intrigue. You kind of just want to see what all that chatter has been about. So I'm thrilled to hear that he's looking like he's going to come over next year.
Yeah, Yeah, I want to see what they pay him to. It's kind of interesting that it's probably doesn't seem like just on the timing that it's likely that he'll play summer league. So that's certainly worth considering it and seeing what is happening in that regard. I think it'd be better if he played summer league, but it doesn't seem like that is particularly likely. The next thing is also on June 30th, we got the news that Paul George was traded to Oklahoma City and not Cleveland. Per the reporting now, we've learned that Indiana, the Cavs, and the Nuggets were talking about a three-team deal on that Friday. The Indiana didn't seem to want to deal George to an Eastern Conference team, whether that be the Cavs or the Celtics. What was your reaction to George now?
Well, I thought it was kind of funny because I think George had been linked to about, what, 7, 8, 9 teams almost, and like the Thunder were not one at all. So when I saw the Shelburne report, I was like, the Thunder? I mean, it just was not the team I expected, just given the way that the chatter had gone. It seemed like there were a bunch of teams that he was in play for. The Thunder, his name, I don't think came up once until Shelburne's tweet. So I was a little surprised there, but... Oh, it was laughable, like, really. No picks for Indiana is insane. I do think that goes to the point, though, that they just didn't want to give him within the Eastern Conference, just given that return that they got. It just seemed like they were just willing to almost do anything from a Western Conference suitor. But, I mean, if from Oklahoma City standpoint, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, you know, you give rid of Oladipo's $21 million. So there's that. And now you kind of go for this 1 year of maybe you win enough to keep George there and get Westbrook to re-sign. But if not, it's not like you gave up a boatload of future assets by way of picks or recent draft picks. So, I mean, I think if you're Oklahoma City, you're sitting in a great spot and you have to be thrilled with the trade, even if it is, you know, just a one-year rental if George walks. But I think it's overall pretty great.
Yeah, I think for the Cavs, that would be... like, it's a tough pill to swallow to not land Paul George if you're the Cavs, right? Like, it's not... this is the guy you were probably going to end up trying to get more so than a Jimmy Butler. Now, I think, like, this to me was the end mark on the Cavs being able to improve, like, change up the main core of the team for next season, at least in a way that I think makes sense, right? Like, I can justify a Paul George for Kevin Love functional swap, but, like, the deal isn't that, but, like, that's functionally what it would be, right? Like, for the Cavs, for just the basics of team construction. This, to me, like, there's no other really realistic scenario where you, like, deal Kevin Love now. Like, that, to me, if you're the Cavs, is sort of what the signals. And it's interesting to me that they were caught off guard. Like, that was something they were, quote, surprised. It was, I believe, the line in the Windhorst story about this. For me, like, that, like, I don't want to just, I think, like, it's telling that, like, other teams are surprised as well. The Nuggets, you know, who have a good front office, who aren't going through the turmoil like the Cavs currently are. But I also just feel like it's not great that like, you're surprised. Like, maybe that says about Indiana more so than does about the Cavs, but that's not great. But I do think this was, like, the end of the, let's functionally change the DNA of this team for next year, at least in a way that I think would make sense. Or is it actually realistic? Because, like, if the Cavs got to call tomorrow and the Warriors were like, yeah, let's trade you know, Durant.
Right.
For
you know, I agree with you. I do think, like, when that deal went down, that was my next thought, was like, well, there's no really other player out there who's been rumored, you know, linked to trades that the Cavs should be willing to sacrifice Love. So I do agree with you that basically means Love will be here, which, again, isn't a bad thing. But it was after his name had kind of been around for a bunch. It's always, I think, weird sometimes. Like, I know the players might not be paying attention to it as much as we do, but, you know, there's going to be just tons of stuff to say about Love next year, because I do think he'll be back after the way he was linked to so many different things this summer.
Let's point out one other thing about this as well.
No,
what
that's
do you,
just
would you do Melo for Love? I just want to, like, for the record,
yeah, that's might be the dumbest thing
no one should say.
I've heard in quite some time. No, yeah, absolutely not. I figured we'd get there, but yeah, No. No chance.
Yeah. Yeah, no chance. Okay, so then we're going to jump ahead because we're going to lump the big thing up into one. Then you have the report on July 1st. The Rockets discuss a deal that would send Amon Shumpert to Houston. It seemed like the reporting that was from Windhorst and stuff indicated that it was to set up another deal to create a trade exception to trade for a player that had never been named, right? What did you make of Shumpert maybe being traded to Houston, which is now off the table because Houston, who did make the Chris Paul trade to team up
with... Yeah, well, to me that one was, again, on a team that needs athletic young guys on the wing, it seemed weird that, like, when Shumpert's name came up, my first thought was, well, they better have something solid in store if they got rid of him, right? Like, that was my first thought, that they have to be, you know, have a clear goal in mind. Because they can't just give up. We know that Shump is not as good a defender as perhaps his people want to suggest. But he's, you know, on this current team, you could do a lot worse than him. So when that came up, I was thinking they have to really know what they're doing by getting rid of him. I understand, like, unloading that $10 million deal, like you said, creating that exception, maybe perhaps creating a little bit more flexibility, but that flexibility would have to be exercised in a way that gives someone who's a wing defender, you know, back. So, but I'm not sure what they're doing there. Hang on, Chris. Chris, hang on.
I think if you were going to...
Is a worm being used? Awesome. Huh? Do you know if it's a worm going to be used?
We only need it to
come back in. All right, I'll step across. Thanks. All right, hey, Chris, you good? All right. Just got bumped out of the room I was in the newsroom. Yeah. But I just came across the hall.
Yeah. No worries. Yeah, no worries.
Well, I just finished the part about, like...
What was I saying?
Thinking what they should do with Shump and, like, the wing defender. So you want to just pick up there?
Okay, yeah. Right, yeah. So my thing with Shump is that if you could get someone very versatile, I would say do it. I just don't know what you're actually getting from a trade exception, because when you get the trade exception, unless a team is salary dumping somebody, so like maybe Portland would dump Farouk Aminu, right? Like maybe that's something that could happen, theoretically. Maybe there's a backup point guard, like theoretically, that could have been, dumped there, right? But Courtney Lee, maybe the Knicks would dump someone like that, but you're probably attaching an asset to get somebody like that. Danny Green, right? Someone people mentioned. So like, it's Chetty. Do you do Chetty? You have the 2021 and 2023, which I think as far as you can go. And like, how much of those guys are you actually willing to give up? Like, are you willing to cash in all your assets again? Like, because if just to, so people understand this, I'm going to point out two things here. One, it's very hard to use trade exceptions unless you attach something to them. Like, you have to entice other teams with them, as I said. Two, if the Cavs functionally have three assets left, I think, unless they were to deal Love, I think Thompson could get them something. I don't know 100% sure what it would be, but if they wanted to keep the core together, their assets basically would be that trade exception as a salary matching tool for the Cavs, then Chetty Osman and a 2021 pick. They don't have cap space to absorb guys into. They don't have, like, Kay Felder and Eddie Tavares don't have value, right? Once they have dealt the 2021 and or the 2023 and Chetty, there are no moves left for the Cavs to make. None. For several years. Until they bottom out and, like, have to basically restart from the bottom. That is what you're looking at if they do something like Shumpert to set up another deal that deals what chips they have left.
And I don't want to get into it, you know, but just given some of the uncertain future, you would totally be boxed in a corner if they did that. And yeah, it just, that doesn't sit well, right? Just even just like hearing that again, as I've long thought about that, just how little kind of wiggle room they have with the assets when you phrase it that way, and you know, there's literally three, and if they give them up, they're in a really, really tough spot for years to come, too, because 2021 is still like three seasons away. So that's, you don't want to be in that situation.
No, not at all. Other thing that happened around this time, July 1st, the Cavs signed Jose Calderon, the veteran Spanish point guard, to a one-year deal worth the league minimum, which will be $2.3 million for next season. Kevin, I'm going to take this one first here. I've said this on Twitter. I do not get Calderon at all in terms of just pure fit. He's a bad defender. His shot wasn't great last year. He's older. He's slower. I also don't know why you had to do this on the first day, the first actual day of free agency, the first official day of free agency. Like that to me is just why. Why is this the thing you're doing?
When I think it was Jason Lloyd was the first one who said that there was mutual interest between the two teams. And that to me was, I'm like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. But I'm like, well, it's just interest. And then when the deal was announced, like you said, he's someone who's, it's not like his defense has declined either too. I mean, since he's been in the league, he's been widely known as a suspect defender at best. And on a team that, again, I said it before, on a team that needs wing defenders that are young and athletic that can help you against Golden State, Calderon doesn't fit that bill at all. So it's just that was a puzzling move. And like you said, it's not even like they waited till the last couple of days and, kind of this like main period of free agency and then offered Calderon. I mean, the first day it was, oh man, it was, it really didn't make a lot of sense at all.
Yeah.
No, there's zero positive spin.
Is there any positive spin to you for that?
The only thing is, like, I think he was, 31% from three last year? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that was, like, a dip from, I thought, 39 was what I had looked up a couple days ago. So the only way would him be to shoot, like, 44% next year, which isn't going to happen. I mean, there's no realistic silver lining in the positive spin, I should say. The only way would be if he just has like an unconscious year from three, but there's no data to suggest that that would happen. So no, this is a bad move through and through for me.
Yeah, I also would just say, like, I think I would also just say that the framework of the Cavs' backup point guard was established by Delly, and they haven't really gone to that same model. They're going more for the Deron Williams model, which had its ups and its downs. Like, it worked. I think he was bad in the finals, maybe didn't live up to expectations, but I think this is going their way. I just can't imagine that he'll even surpass.
No, right. And I think you mentioned that
with Deron Williams.
I don't remember if it was when we were texting or if you did say it on Twitter, but yeah, like you mentioned that Delly model, the 3-and-D backup point guard. He did that so well, and after, you know, in his absence, they didn't have it last year. They got Williams, you know, but they kind of have gone away from that model. I'm not saying there was like a Delly like player out there that, you know, they could have gotten, but Calderon is the quite opposite of that. So, you know, it's not even like they got like Delly light or something like that. They went in a complete opposite direction. And it's not a good move considering that's like the only thing they've done.
Right. I am all 100% in on that. On that being the thing, I don't think he fits it at all. I think he's a worse version of one Deron Williams. So it is what it is. And the Cavs maybe just have a better idea what they need. I just don't really like the Calderon because he's not a good playable against the Warriors.
And I don't know why they're signing guys that with that clear defined goal. It's just a puzzling move. Honestly, I'm speechless at this point.
I'm with you. All right, let's get into the juicier stuff here, Kevin. First, Carmelo Anthony willing to trade his no trade clause for either a deal to the Cavs or the Rockets. I think the only way you deal Melo is if you could do like Shumpert. Maybe you'd probably have to do a pick and Fry would work financially. Maybe some filler salary in there in some way to kind of make that work. But I would not deal any of your core four. Friend of the show and one of my former co-writers, our co-workers at another Cavs blog, Mike Schreiner, was like, yeah, I would do Tristan and Shumpert for Kyle Quinn and Melo. And I wouldn't do that. Like, I just don't really get the upside of Kyle Quinn replacing what Tristan does at all. So I think you have to, like, I think you try to get him to buy it. I also just don't think Melo fixes anything. And, like, I know people have tweeted at me and have, you know, said, like, yeah, like, he maybe fixes the backup point, the non-LeBron minute issue where the creator. Kyrie and Kevin Love should be able to do that just fine, if we're being honest, if we're being blunt here. Like, they are good enough offensively, individually and together, to make those minutes more workable for the Cavs. And 33-year-old Melo, if he's your fix there.
The only thing, like, that he does is, again, if you were to just sub him on and you forget about the financials, you're having to give up passes, you're going to have to score a ton of points to beat Golden State, right? Like, the games are going to be up and down. I know, obviously, defense helps, but, like, against Golden State, like, you need to put the ball in the basket. And so, like, that's what, on the surface, Melo does, is he gives you a score. But, again, like you said, would you bring him off, like, the bench? He's bad on defense. He can't really – yeah, there's no one for him to eat. Like, he doesn't solve any of the defensive problems that were so prevalent in the finals. So it's the name that people think, like, and that, I guess, since he's been in New York and it's been like such a black hole there, people really haven't followed his kind of play that all, I think, all that closely. So they don't really recognize that he's, like you said, like 33. It's not 2010 anymore. It's a move that, like, if they just said you could have him for nothing, right? It's like, okay, well, I wouldn't say no, but the fact that you would, you know, even to give up, yeah, what Mike said on Twitter, no,
that was my whole response, and, like, I was annoyed that clarify, and I got, like,
it's not a good move that you have to give up any sort of asset. Like I said, if they were just give him to the Cavs, which isn't a possibility, but, like, I would say fine, but they have to create, you know, a deal for him that even would include Fry. Like, I don't know, in the regular season, Fry is really valuable. So it's just, I get the buzz by it and people are kind of excited, but he's not Paul George. If people think if that's, like, the kind of solution that they think he would be. Like, a little bit worse than Paul. Like, he's not anywhere near that. He's not Jimmy Butler or some of the other wings that they were linked to in free agency. So I kind of hope this rumor just dies down so I don't have to hear about it anymore.
Yeah, I don't think Melo, this is maybe a bit of a hot take. I just don't think he helps the Cavs or the Rockets that much against Golden State. Let's leave it at that. Kyle Korver, and then we'll get to the real, real juicy stuff. Signs a 3-year deal, $22 million last year, is non-guaranteed. I think this is a great deal for the Cavs. It's good value, tradable deal if things go south very fast.
The structure of the deal is very, very good. That's, like, the thing that stuck out to me noticeably was the way that was structured. So I think you can't complain. You get a guy who was outstanding from three. Again, we know his struggles are well-documented against Golden State in the finals, but – you know, I think there was probably a combination of jitters, 14 years in the league and finally getting there. So I think there's some other things that I expect him to obviously continue to shoot the ball a great clip next year. So with the money, the structure of the deal, why would you not want Korver on your team? And I guess on another white reason, like, you did just give up a first round pick for him in January. So, that would have been kind of a tough pill to swallow. Like, if you give up a first round pick and then you have him for a year and you don't even try and re-sign him. So I think all things considered about the deal, it's a great move for the Cavs. Yeah.
All right, let's get in. They couldn't have replaced him, like, in any way. So you just kind of got to bite the bullet, I think. All right, the big thing here is that Chauncey Billups has removed himself from consideration to be the Cavs' next leader. It seems like Kobe Altman, someone that has impressed Dan Gilbert. I'm gonna go on a bit of a tangent rant here. Not a rant, just this is gonna be my take on this. I don't think Dan Gilbert's like actually that good of an owner. This is for multiple reasons. This is not a hot take. Number one, he very much seems that he likes to meddle in things, right? He wanted more control over the roster with Griffin. He wanted his voice heard, which, you know, he's rich, like he's entitled to that, to having that if it's his team to an extent, but that doesn't typically work well. So I don't think that's great. I think he makes decisions sometimes that are not particularly just the brightest. Like the letter when LeBron left was just incredible. Like you could see how much it hurt the James family feelings when like LeBron in that video said his wife and his mom didn't really want him to come back and play for Dan Gilbert again. Just the regardless of your politics, like the op-ed of showing up at the Chicago Cubs' White House visit last week, when your star player A was a Clinton supporter, and B it's the team that beat the team in Cleveland in the World Series, and then like that, like why, like that's just like, again, regardless of your politics, like that's just a dumb PR move. You know, not wanting to spend more than $3 million on a GM and when you have other teams that are paying their really good GMs a value is problematic. I think, like, you know, people want to have argued to me, like, yeah, like, the Griffin, they stuff improved when LeBron left. Well, like, really, the Cavs just got lucky a lot when LeBron left the first time, right? Like, the pick that could be was the Kyrie pick was a pick that shouldn't have been that high. It was supposed to be very late in the lottery, right? They botched the Bennett pick completely. You know, maybe none of those other guys are particularly, like, great players. You know, that draft is going to go down as one of the worst, but, like, you took Anthony Bennett, you know? there's problems there. And the Gilbert, and that's not, like, and that's his decision, but he was the supervisor here. He's never re-signed a GM, ever, right? And the only reason, like, you get... The reason, like, you're set up to get LeBron to get back isn't because Dan Gilbert, like, committed to changing his ownership style or the Cavs changed the way they do things. It was, they got lucky with the Tristan pick, like, that working out as well as it did, and him developing enough. You know, you got lucky to get Kyrie. You know, you got lucky to win the Wiggins lottery when they had, like, the ninth best odds or something like that, you know, and having the piece to get Kevin Love. And you're lucky that LeBron James was born in Akron and was the Miami situation. It's like, it's not like Dan Gilbert became a better owner. He got lucky with the circumstances that set him up to get LeBron back. And he has spent, and he deserves credit for spending on everything but the arena, because he should be paying for the freaking Q renovations because he's making money off of it. You know, and the city of Cleveland doesn't really have any money. I don't think Dan Gilbert is a good owner. I just don't. There's nothing he could really do to me that could convince me right now that he's like actually a good owner that is doing things thoughtfully and organized and competently. I, you know, I'm not saying that David Griffin was a perfect GM. I think there are flaws in what he did. I also think, like, if you want to just trust, have someone in that role that you can trust to make all the right moves, it's insane. It's just like the fact that, like, you're like that ESPN was like basically paying Billups enough to make him not think it was worth very much, or like that you're not willing to pay for an architect of your team more than like $3 million it's incredible. And I don't think Dan Gilbert's a good owner, and I don't really think the Cavs have handled this whole process well.
I'm not honestly sure I can add anything more to your Gilbert take, and I except maybe this, just point out that they also took Deion Waiters in that stretch too, who obviously emerged a little bit last year, and you know, you and I have our affinities for him, kind of from a humorous standpoint. But like, you also, you know, you didn't mention that one in there too. So it's not like, you know, LeBron left and Gilbert suddenly got great. They have had, honestly, like the GMs, like Danny Ferry was fine, but I mean, again, when you have LeBron on your team, it's a lot easier to.
Dan Gilbert has never, like, re-signed a GM. He hired Mike Brown because he didn't feel like he actually had to fire him the first time.
Yeah, and they're obviously still paying him now. It's just, no, it's not been great. The credit where credit's due for willing to swallow. I mean, like, they're paying, what, 42 point something in luxury tax this offseason. Like, credit there. But from, like, a personnel move and from like a, you know, a strategy, it's just not been great. Very, very, like, I just don't feel good about this whole thing. There's just no other way to spin it other than just having like a weird, I've tried to laugh and realize, like, okay, it's out of my control. But, like, just thinking about the whole Billups debacle right now, and it's like they really have – they didn't interview anybody else. I mean, it'll probably be Kobe Altman. That's what – if I had a bet, that's what I would bet. But the whole thing is just – it's just terrible. It does not sit well with me right now. But I'm just trying to recognize that it's nothing I could do to change the situation, but it's just bad. Especially for a team that still like is the favorites in the East, especially with the exodus of talent there. It's like it's weird that you have such a sour taste in your mouth about a team that's probably going to advance to the fourth finals, but it's just not great.
No, and I tell me if you agree with this, Kevin. I think that if there's someone to blame here, and like again, you have LeBron. We didn't even mention this. LeBron's like not helping recruit at all. Even like edge peripheral guys, like he didn't call PJ Tucker as far as we know, right? I think this falls on Gilbert's shoulders. Like I do not think that there is anyone here that deserves blame other than Dan Gilbert. Let me nuance that for a second. There are probably people in the organization too that like had some role in this, but I think like the buck has to stop Dan Gilbert in the situation. He's the one who philosophically couldn't come to terms with Griffin, that didn't want the control and the salary to work there. He's the one who targeted Chauncey Billups, a guy who he has a prior relationship with, and B was making it known to the Cavs before Griffin and the job had even opened up that he wanted the job. Like he could not, like that he made, was made a counteroffer to, like that he could not make that work in a timely fashion before free agency started. Like it's insane that a team with LeBron James, who could leave next summer, that has to do all this retooling and do all this stuff and to get themselves in a position to better match with Golden State next year, to have a better chance of winning a title and trying to keep LeBron around. It is insane that it is July 3rd as we record this, and they never ended up with a GM.
It is. And I mean, I agree with you because it's like the idea that you easily get Griffin back if it wasn't just like Gilbert's philosophical difference, which of course I think everyone can agree is like wanting a little bit more say in basketball decisions. That's pretty much the difference. And of course, probably pay too. But I mean, all he has to do is just pony up the cash. I mean, again, he's willing to swallow a $42 million luxury tax bill. Like, come on, seriously, you can't give Griffin what he rightfully deserves. And then, you know, you can't just recognize that you're not an almighty basketball god and know, like, how the CBA works and how to maneuver stuff as brilliantly as Griffin does. It's just, I mean, I agree with you, Chris. There's nowhere else to place the blame, honestly.
I don't think the Bucks should stop.
For you, I mean, do you think that is it Altman? Is that who it's going to be?
Yeah, I would just guess so. I mean, you had the report from Tom Withers that from the Associated Press that Altman has impressed Gilbert. Just a quick background on Kobe Altman. I'm going to just make sure we get his bio in here correct and give you an idea of who he is. He was assistant general manager pro personnel for the team for the 2016-17 season. He's a fairly young guy. He's like, I mean, he's not in a particularly new position or a particularly new thing. He joined the Cavs in 2012, so he's been around for a little bit. He was an assistant coach at Columbia for two seasons, worked for USA Basketball, but he was most recently, think about this, he was most recently a graduate assistant after getting his master's at UMass. He was a graduate assistant in 2009-2010. So it's not like this is, you know, an old hand or someone who has been like around, like this isn't like they're signing a veteran and they shouldn't like go sign Phil Jackson. That would be really dumb. But like, you're just in a position where like he has to be the guy at this point. I don't think, like, I don't think you have time or the flexibility to go out and like go do a full search. You should have just done that when Billups wasn't going to, when you got.
Oh yeah. No question. Like they were just like, was he just like twiddling his thumbs for like the 11 days that he mulled the offer over or whatever it was? I mean,
he went to, he like that. That's the thing. It's just like like he should like why go like the White House is just a in itself it's just a bad PR move. Like it just presents just like disorganization and a lack of awareness. Like I'm not saying he doesn't have like the right to go there if that's what he wants to do, but like you have to think about like how it's going to be viewed, and you have to think about like what's going on with your team and like going to DC. Like was that did that make any sense? You know. Like, regardless of your politics, like, did that make any sense in terms of just, like, if on its face, like, are you focused on the team
it was,
right
it
now?
Was, I mean, well, I think he was there to talk about Detroit's revival in the morning, but it's just not been, yeah, it's, Which, but it's, like, it's just
he,
not been a
he
great
has
situation,
a very big role
and, right and it's a little bit frustrating, just given how much on-court success the team has had, like, it should be less turbulent than this, but here we are.
Yeah, here that is a very very good way to put it and way to wrap this up. It should be less turbulent than it is. It is a team with a high payroll. The Korver deal pushes that tax bill, you know, above $40 million, and Gilbert's the one footing that bill, and that is worth noting as well. I just don't really have a lot of sympathy for billionaires.
Yeah, man. Who knows? This has been quite the fun off season just all around. But too bad the Cavs are sinking the whole thing.
Yeah, it's freaking July 3rd, and this is where we're at. Kevin, let's wrap it up on this one last question. I'm going to ask you, any other thing you're looking forward to seeing how it turns out?
I just would like to see them get someone who could help them defend in the finals against a hypothetical Golden State matchup. But just right now, it doesn't seem like, the player who I wanted that to be, Tucker, is off the board. I just don't really see them able to do that from like just signing anybody. So that would be the thing I'm looking for, but I'm just not confident that it's going to happen. So just succinctly, someone who can help defend in the finals against a hypothetical fourth matchup versus Golden State, but I just don't see it.
Yeah. With you on that, I don't know what they do next. I think some of their more interesting free agent targets are off the board. We'll have to see what happens with Shumpert and all these guys, but it's always interesting.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for having me on. I kind of needed to just talk about it. So it down. Very, very therapeutic.
Yeah. Make sure you check out Kevin on Twitter at Kevin_Stank and check out his work in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette this summer. I'll be back soon with another episode. We're going to take a detour off this stuff to talk through Summer League with Trevor Magnotti, which will be fun. And we'll talk more later this week about everything going on. We'll have micropods up if the Cavs sign other players. But this has been Chris Manning for myself and Kevin Stankiewicz. This has been Locked on Cavaliers. Hope you had a great fourth. Hope you will have a great fourth, rather, and we'll talk to you again here very soon.